Senator Charles Huerta joins us this morning. Senator, thanks for being with us this morning.
Good morning, Scott.
You were, of course, with us last week to talk about Emerging Technologies Fund, but now Texas is in the national headlines for all the wrong reasons, and since you're the chairman of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee, I know you've got some thoughts on the Ebola situation.
Right. Well, it's very unfortunate. Texas has the first confirmed case of the Ebola virus, and it's I'm sure, quite frightful to some individuals out there in the Brazos Valley and across Texas, but the bottom line is, I think right now, the CDC and the Department of State Health Services is doing what is necessary to identify and isolate and contain and treat that individual and potentially other individuals that came in contact with him.
Now, again, we should know about this. We should be up to speed on all sorts of pandemic situations that might happen. But explain, if you will, a little bit about the Ebola virus and how it might be spread from one person
right.
to another.
The Ebola virus is a hemorrhagic fever virus. It's a virus that has an incubation period of between 4 and 21 days, and the initial symptoms are kind of flu-like symptoms, fever and chills and headaches. But it progresses and is very deadly. It's an 80% plus mortality rate, at least in the countries in West Africa where it has historically been endemic. And in the latter stages, it has significant, you can actually have bleeding through pretty much any orifice and severe vomiting and diarrhea. And, of course, all those body fluids, blood and body fluids, are highly contaminated. But the key is Ebola is not airborne transmitted. It is transmitted by direct contact with blood or body fluids from the individual.
So I guess job number one they're trying to do right now is find out if this individual had any such contact with anybody else
right.
than where it would have been spread.
We've been assured by the CDC that he did not have symptoms coming over on the 20th, and he only started developing symptoms on the 24th. I have no reason to doubt the CDC, but the concern I have, the skeptic in me, tells me to be leery. You know, people can get sick and realize there have been people treated here in the United States successfully and board a flight and come over here seeking medical care, just as people come over for economic reasons or social welfare reasons. People come over for healthcare reasons too, and you know that's a concern I have about having insecure borders, and that's something we have to be worried about.
But wasn't it just a matter of time? I mean, in reality, that this would happen.
It is. We don't have, I think, good secure borders. There's precautions we might be able to take on the national level. Stopping the flights from West Africa might be one step that might be necessary. The truth of the matter is we have drug trafficking and human trafficking, cartel violence, and the threat of terrorism, and now the threat of biologic disease transmission. So this is a serious issue for our country, and we need to take action.
Do you see that the FDA may fast-track now the care that was given the first two individuals who came back to America based on this?
Yes, I'm sure the CDC and we'll be looking at every avenue to try to improve the care and treatment of the Ebola virus.
Okay. Well, let's move on to a couple of other things, since, again, you are the chairman of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. I know that you really took a pretty hard stand on some nursing homes that were not holding up to standards that you thought needed to be set. What do you think needs to be done about that, and do you see action in the legislature?
Well, Scott, we need to be able to protect our most vulnerable seniors that reside in nursing homes. These are our parents and our grandparents. And quite simply, we have not been able to get rid of the worst actors in reference to the nursing homes that continue in operation, that continue to have significant violations, or what are called level 4 violations, that put that individual in immediate jeopardy and endangerment of either life or safety. And what I proposed was what they call a 3-strikes rule, which if a nursing home facility had 3 level 4 violations on 3 separate days over a 24-month period, that their license, which is under state control, would be revoked. There are about 1,200 nursing homes in the state of Texas, and on a retrospective analysis, that type of proposal, if law at that time, would have only, over the last 2 years, would only included 7 of 1,200 nursing homes. So what we're going after are the worst of the worst actors, the repeated bad actors, in reference to nursing homes that just can't clean up their act. And I think that's what Texans expect of the state in reference to the regulation of nursing homes.
If people believe that they have a loved one who has not been treated properly, what's the step that they need to take?
Well, they should report it to the Department of Aging and Disability Services, which is the regulatory agency in charge of the regulation of nursing homes. And they will send out an individual to do a review, a complaint review of that facility.
We're visiting this morning with Senator Charles Swertner, our state senator. There was a legal ruling yesterday by a federal judge in Oklahoma that said Obamacare subsidies cannot go to residents of states that are not running their own insurance exchanges. So your thoughts there?
Right. There's been multiple rulings in reference to this this issue. The letter of the law says that if you do not have a state exchange, you cannot get a subsidy. So that would, there's about 27 states that do not have state exchanges. So if that were the case, then, of course, Obamacare would unravel. And there have been some courts that have sided with the letter of the law. There are others that were more the intent of what they considered the intent of the law. This all goes up to the confusion and costs and really loss of confidence in our leadership and in Congress to put forth bills that make sense, that are right for the people of America. And of course, this bill, the ACA bill, was passed without a single Republican vote. I'll remind the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Ran through in early 2010 by supermajorities of the Democrat caucus in both the Senate and the House.
Finally, November 4th.
They'll be decided by, of course, the Supreme Court.
Sure, that will end up there. Finally, on November the 4th, we've got a long, long, long ballot to go through. A lot of voters need to understand it's going to take a while in the box. But at the very end of that are constitutional amendments. Now, Todd Staples happened to be speaking here in Bryan College Station yesterday,
mm-hmm.
having to do with Proposition 1 to the state constitution.
Right.
This is a pretty pretty significant change that's going to go on having to do with funding for highways. Now,
right.
there's something in place already that was a transfer from the rainy day fund. That was Prop 6, but we've got something new and different. Could you kind of give us an overview of Prop 1 and how you feel about it?
Sure. I believe Prop 1 should be passed by the people of Texas. I voted for it. It's a proposition that utilizes some of the oil and gas severance tax that historically has gone to the rainy day fund. It takes half of that money and then diverts it to Fund 6, which is the transportation fund for use of our infrastructure. And quite simply, Texas is growing, and we need to continue to develop infrastructure for a growing, prosperous state. And roads and utilities and water are three critical infrastructures to maintain the Texas economic miracle. And, Proposition 1, there are parameters in there that if the fund balance of our savings account, our rainy day fund, gets too low, then the spigot going toward the transportation fund would be turned off. So there are precautions and safety valves there that keep our economic stabilization fund, our rainy day fund, from getting too low. That wasn't part of the legislation that is part of Proposition 1. So I ask all the listeners to look at Proposition 1, to consider the critical needs of the state, the growing state, and understand how that fits into the Texas economic miracle and cast a vote in favor of Proposition 1.
In your view, is there any other kind of funding source that we can do for highways, though?
Well, I'm not a proponent of new taxes or tolls or fees. What I'd like to see is TxDOT to administer its agency more effectively, and I think it's done so under General Weber and is heading in the right direction, but it did have trouble 3 or 4 years ago. It needs to focus on high congestion areas. I think this is a significant step forward, this Proposition 1. And, I think we can, it's where we need to be heading. There's other proposals about utilizing the sales tax from cars and dedicating it directly to transportation. That's General Abbott's, our future governor's proposal. But the issue there is, we're trying to get away from dedicated accounts. And so I'm not necessarily sold on that just yet. Dedicating a portion of our sales tax that goes to the general fund that when you buy a car, will put a big hole in the budget for other things. So how do you backfill there? And what do you do in reference to making sure the state continues to have the ability to fund the critical issues. Certainly, I'd like to cut expenses first, but there's the issue of what do you do when you take a certain portion of the sales tax and dedicate it just to transportation.
State Senator Charles Fortner joining us this morning. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. Thanks for the time this morning, Senator.
You bet. You have a nice day, Scott.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.